All right. Here we go. Another edition of Talkin' Dodgers, your number one fan Dodger podcast. Well, welcome to another edition brought to you by Roger Brain Media. This episode is sponsored by Command Creative Studios. If you're looking to jump into the podcast world and start making your own content, Command Creative Studios is your one-stop shop for professional podcasts. With a team of audio engineers, music composers, and graphic designers, Command Creative Studios can get your podcast sounding professional as well as looking professional. For more information, please visit commandcreativestudios.com. Don't forget to hit that like and subscribe button. Help us spread like a virus.
Like a virus.
Don't forget we're on YouTube, so if you want to look at our pretty faces, go check out the YouTube channel. Okay,
you're really pretty.
Thank you. It's all the new Dodger blue.
You guys love using pretty.
I don't. It's Robbie.
Okay, so really fast.
Speaking of pretty, the Dodgers look really pretty right now.
We have missed an episode or two. Schedules kind of got in the way. We had some stuff happen, but we're back. A lot of stuff to talk about. A lot of good things have happened. Before we jump into a lot of the current stuff, just to recap feelings really fast, because we didn't have an episode right after the Dodgers clinched or basically beat the Padres to move on to the NL Championship Series. So I just want to start that off really quick because that was a very stressful series, in my opinion, going down 2-1 or 1-2, however you want to look at it, and then being able to battle back in that last game for Yamamoto, because I was very sketched out about Yamamoto pitching the last game because the way that he has looked against the Padres throughout the regular season, and man, did he come through and dominate. The Dodgers said that they figured out that he was tipping his pitches. Apparently they were correct because the Padres didn't have anything to, they didn't have an answer for Yamamoto. And that was one of the most satisfying games, even though we only scored two runs, just to know that we won't have to see the pod. We won't have to talk about the Padres after this podcast until preseason next year. And that is super exciting because most of the guys in that team, I can't stand. Mike, you got any feelings on that one?
On the Padres series?
Just for the fact that the Padres are no longer in our lives right now. And, you know, I'm just very excited about that. It made this new series that we're in right now, even though we're already on game four, seem like it's like we got all the stress out of the way with the Padres, and now it's time to relax and enjoy baseball, playoff baseball.
Are you talking about as a fan or as far as the Dodgers go? I mean, which way? And as a fan,
you can just talk about it as a human being. I don't care.
Well, so there's two sides of it. So as a fan, and obviously a passionate Dodger fan. I was a little bit weary that the bravado and the arrogance and the swagger of the Padres were going to get the best of the Dodgers. However, I believe that 3-1, did we beat them 3-1 in the last series of the season, right? Where we won the series?
Yes.
Yep.
I believe them winning that series the way they did in a dominant fashion, they never faltered or were worried when we were down 2-1, right? So I think we had that. Was it bullpen game that we won? Game when we were down 2-1? Was it bullpen game?
The bullpen game brought us 2-2. Yeah, and that was dominant.
Okay, so when the bullpen game happened, like it shut everybody up. Like the momentum switched, and then after game four, I felt this confidence and a little bit of arrogance that everything finally came together after us weathering the storm the last 6 weeks of the season.
Yeah.
And I felt like the team was just clicking on all cylinders and like they had found their chemistry and camaraderie with the latest pitching staff. And I believe Roberts was masterful in his management.
Yeah.
And, the second we tied up a 2-2, and then I did not see the 2-0 win with Yamamoto pitching coming.
It was good.
I did not think that was going to happen. Not that we're going to lose, but I didn't think we would play that dominant. With that being said, I've always said, as long as starting pitching does not give up more than 3 runs, we'll win. And we've set records in the last 5 games leading into the Mets series. I mean, we gave up 1 run, grand slam, whatever it came to.
Yeah.
So, generally speaking, like I'm very, very confident in our team right now. And I don't think there's anybody that can stop us from getting a ring.
I agree with that. just to put this in perspective and how badly, so the arrogance you talk about of the Padres, the way that they acted, the way they acted at Dodger Stadium.
Yeah.
Because we touched base on that a little bit on how the fans, what they did was inappropriate, what throwing stuff onto the field and stuff. But then you saw more videos coming out of what Tatis Jr. was doing in right field, what he was doing
Machado,
to the fans, what Machado was doing, and all those guys and stuff like that. That all came out. So the arrogance of them in that game, they didn't score another run after the second inning of the game that Buehler pitched, the third game. They didn't score another run. And the runs that they scored in the second inning, we've talked about this. I think only two of those runs should have been earned.
Agreed.
And so if you think about it, the Dodgers really handled them, even though it was a very stressful series. The Dodgers handled them pretty confidently, if you think about it. If you look at the stats, I mean, obviously, if you watch the game, it doesn't feel that way. But if you look at the stats, the Dodgers basically handled them. And
they pretty much, like,
it felt good. It felt good to put them in their spot, put them in their place, because, like I said, I felt like that was the second, they were the second best team in the National League. I thought they were the second best, and that was so good to actually see them get knocked out and go for the Mets. And then I feel like this Mets series is turning out better than I expected. I feel like it's kind of going the way we all thought it was going to go, but it's turning out better than we expected. And so it's easy. What I'm saying is I like the fact that I can breathe and actually enjoy this playoff. I'm not as anxious during this series because it's a 7-game series also.
Again, back to the Padres, a couple things. I think after all the hoopla and the drama that we talked about in that game with the Dodger fans, Padres, Machado, Tatis, and all them, I feel like the team put them in their place and beat them with class. Like, they just flat out beat them.
Yeah.
Like, there wasn't too much talking back and forth, like, but at least not, I felt like we just beat them with class, and that was our biggest threat to our postseason was the Padres. Obviously, the Mets did us a favor by beating the Phillies 3-1. But, I mean, we look really good right now. Again, tonight, big win. What is it, 10-2? 9-2?
10-2. All right, so let's jump into the current National League Championship Series. I know that seems kind of weird to throw in the Padres right now, considering we're already 4 games deep in the National League Championship, but
a light switch came on. The team's done a complete 180.
Yeah,
When did the Padres become like a rival for the Dodgers like that?
They're a rival just because they're good right now in the West.
But I always thought the Giants were the natural rival.
The main
right?
is still the Giants. Yeah, okay. Main still the Giants.
It's more the way the bravado and the arrogance of the Padres and how they carry themselves when they beat the Dodgers is more so why they became more of a rival. The Giants don't have that arrogant, cocky attitude that the Padres kind of carry a little bit.
Yeah,
that's why it's kind of
it's classier organization. Let's just say that it's a classier organization.
We all can right. say that.
So enough of the Padres. We don't have to talk about them anymore. Don't forget, this is a good time to click that like and subscribe button if you like what you're listening to, if you like what you're hearing. Help us spread like a virus.
Like a virus.
If you guys have any of your own thoughts on how you feel after the Padres series, feel free to send us some messages. Let us know what you think. Who is the rock star of that? I mean, I'd have to say it's probably Kike is one of the rock stars, because when he became a starter, the Dodgers have looked like a different team in a positive way, which is good. But anyways, so right now, so the Dodgers just now took game 4. The Dodgers are up 3-1. And they're handling the Mets really well. Let's just say that. With the exception of game 2, which was a bullpen game. And if you look at the stats on that, just really fast, let me pull that up on my end really quick. All their runs came from Landon Knack. So now we know why the Dodgers are not starting Landon Knack, why he hasn't been the game 4 starter, not only because the bullpen is so good, but Landon Knack, he doesn't have the confidence or the pitcher swag that we need right now. I mean, he's going to pitch again. He's a young kid. He's going to pitch again. I guarantee he's probably going to pitch. If the Dodgers don't take them tomorrow, he'll pitch probably in game six. He'll, like, for maybe an inning or two, because they'll do a bullpen game in game 6 if it gets that far. And they're just not going to give him as much leash as they did the previous game. But Landon Knack gave up 5 runs. If Landon Knack doesn't pitch or give up those 5 runs, or, you know, if let's just say that it was a night game instead of a day game, that home, there's no grand slam hit off of him.
Well, hold on.
And the Dodgers still win that game.
Jump in there. I don't think they should have pitched him in the second inning game 2.
Why not?
I don't think he, because I don't think he was good enough.
We've been talking about him like he hasn't been good enough.
He did that in the previous series. It worked.
Yeah.
No, he didn't. He did not come in relief.
No, he did it. Yes, he did. He did the last inning. Yeah, and he looked good.
He didn't pitch early on against the whole series against the Padres. He closed out the game.
Yeah.
Game four or game five, whenever he nothing. He looked good, but I would not have pitched him that early in game two.
Gotcha.
I would have brought somebody else in.
I feel like
Honeycutt dominated. Honeycutt, right?
Well, maybe Honeywell. They thought Honeywell, after he sorry. Had the one inning.
Three strong innings.
Honeycutt was an old pitcher.
Sorry, yes.
Yeah.
Maybe they thought after giving him the one inning versus the Padres, that gave him enough confidence that they can use him to get more innings.
But let's be fair, though. Knack looked pretty good in the regular season a lot of the times, and we all said that he wasn't a bad number four starter. We all originally thought that Knack was going to be the number four starter. If the Dodgers weren't a do or die game on game four, he might have started that game. I'm just saying.
Anyways, yeah, I think so
let's just say take Knack
out of protecting him makes sense.
Take Knack out of the equation.
Well, let's go back. You want to take him out of the equation? I have one other question. Let's just talk about it situationally. So basically what happened was we walked Lindor.
Uh-huh.
And then pitched him. Do you think we should have pitched to Lindor instead?
No, he should have walked him. First base was open. You should have walked him. We would have walked. If that was Ohtani, we would have walked him. That Lindor is there and is there Ohtani.
Lindor had hit the home run in the first inning, the leadoff home run. So he's up again.
Yeah.
It makes sense to walk him with, you said, first base open.
Absolutely.
And you go against Vientos.
I throw a fastball right down the middle.
That you don't do, but
yeah, no, it was a bad pitch.
Bad pitch. Anybody would have, you know,
but it barely went over the wall.
But that's the right strategic move.
Yeah,
you do right.
It was definitely a bad pitch. Let's you know, but I'm saying is the point of the whole reason why I even brought it up was with the exception of Landon Knack, the bullpen has been outstanding during the series. If you look at what the Dodgers have been putting up and what the Mets have been able to put up, if you take Landon Knack out of the equation, dude, the Mets score. They've scored, what, five runs the whole series so far, if you take Knack out of the equation.
You compile that with shutting out the Padres the last few games.
Yeah.
The bullpen has been fire. Well, what do
we
have?
We had a scoring
red hot
scoreless streak until game two, right?
Yeah. Until Brazier gave up the leadoff home run, too.
Yeah, to Lindor.
Yeah, I get it.
That's why they walked him the
Yeah,
the
but it was like 33 innings or something like that.
Yeah,
they tied the record.
All right, so let's just recap some things really quick. So Flaherty, dude, finally, Flaherty shows up and becomes the Flaherty that we wanted him to. He pitched 7 innings,
two hits,
2 walks, 6 Ks.
Make that money.
That was the most dominant we've seen him ever.
Mike, that's that swagger you wanted.
It was definitely swag. Hudson comes in, pitches 1 inning, strikes out. Casper, I can't remember saying that guy's name. 1 inning. Anyways. They pitch a shutout first game. We score 9 runs. Ohtani 2 for 4. Betts 1 for 4. 3 RBIs, a double. Freeman 2 for 3. Muncy 1 for 4. We'll talk about Muncy in the record he just broke today. Or tied it. I gotta look it up again. Kike continues his dominance, 2 for 4. Tommy Edmonds, which I want to talk about him a little bit later as well, 1 for 3. Edmonds and Lux both had a sack bunt in game one. It was a great baseball game to watch because it was pure Dodger dominance on both ends, on pitching and offense. And the Dodgers put on a clinic. Check this out. The Dodgers scored 9 runs with only 1 extra base hit. Only 1 extra base hit. There's no home runs. It was a double. That's it. That's awesome, right? I think you think so as well.
No, I agree. I just want. I was letting you do your thing. So I actually really like Casparius.
Casparius.
Yeah, I'm struggling with this.
Not gonna work here no more. That's for darn sure.
Dude, I like him a lot. I think he looked really good that first game.
Yeah, he's definitely a good. He's going to be a good pitcher for the future of the Dodgers.
Yeah, I like him a lot. I think we're going to need. I mean, we get to the World Series against the Guardians. We're going to need him. But I know that I mean, I don't have any.
It's pretty good.
We played really well game one. Yeah. And I think beating the Padres made took all the pressure off. It's the NLCS.
That's what I'm saying. It deflated. It, like, it basically, there was now they could breathe. Especially because, five-game series, going into a seven-game series, not having to worry about the constant threat. Look, the Mets are a great team. Max, I think you said they're the best team in baseball.
But they're not the Padres.
They're the best team in baseball since, what, July, whatever you said?
End of May. They were 11 games under 500.
Yeah.
And then went on a ridiculous tear. But they were hot.
Their lineup, I'm sorry, is not as threatening as the Padres lineup was. And their pitching is definitely not as threatening as the Dodgers pitch, or I'm sorry, as the Padres pitching.
They've been doing it with a lot of amazing comebacks.
Yeah, and I will say, I was surprised at the outcome of the Phillies Mets series.
Well, Phillies haven't been playing good baseball since the All-Star break.
I was not surprised
by that. Anybody would have, if it was Atlanta would have taken them out too. Phillies.
On paper, I was surprised that they lost 3-1.
Baseball is more than on paper, you know. So Philly hasn't been playing good baseball since the All-Star break.
Yeah.
And the Mets, who were on paper, this was supposed to be a transition year. They pieced together a pitching staff, and they were hot. You know, on paper, they didn't look great, but they won a bunch of games. And Atlanta, another one. They lost all their great players, and they still won games. So that's baseball, Susan, like they say in New York.
Anything else on that game one dominance? I mean, we're playing great team baseball right now, and you talk about teams getting hot, Max. You talked about
the Dodgers are hot
the
now.
Whole season. It's when you get hot at the right time. Our injuries that we've had, Freddie Freeman missing games, pulling them out early, people have stepped up. I actually think Max Muncy going to third and bringing Kiki into the lineup and Lux sitting actually makes us a stronger baseball team.
Muncy's at first.
Well, that's what I mean. Taking Muncy from third to first and getting Kiki in the lineup as a starter, I actually think...
Kike's already a starter because Rojas is out. Rojas is out. Kike's playing center field, and then that brought Tommy Edman into shortstop.
But when
Freeman sits, then... Paez has been coming into center field, and then Kike has been going to third base, and then Muncy has been going to first, which that definitely makes us better defensive-wise, third maybe a little bit, but not in center because I really don't like the way Paez plays center. I mean, we forget Kike played center in Boston, and Kike played center a lot, obviously, with the Dodgers before. He plays a pretty good center field. And the play that he also made, we're watching the replay right now, the play that he made in game one when he faked him out like he was going to throw to third.
That was a huge play.
And he throws to second base, gets him in a...
great play.
Dude, that's smart baseball. Kike is... Look, remember we talked about Tommy Edman and like when we draft players in like Little League and stuff like that, and you see these guys are like really small that you know like if they were bigger, they'd be like really good baseball players. They're just gamers.
Yeah.
Because they're just smart and they love it.
I think him and Tommy Edman.
Kike Hernandez, I feel like he's bigger than Edmonds. I mean, he might not be. He just looks that way. But he's a very smart baseball player. Kike Hernandez is a very smart baseball player. And it definitely shows when he's out there playing. That's a smart move. I haven't seen anybody do that on the Dodgers. Fake a throw to try to get some, like, fake a throw like that. He had a whole, like, you know, crow hop move that he was going to throw to third base, but then throws it to second base. I'm surprised he didn't tweak his back wing. I've never seen that. And he pulled that off extremely well. That was awesome. Go, Kike, go. All right. I think it's enough of a game one. We'll talk. Like, there's no highlights for game two. They're just going to basically just say, look, this is what the bullpen did. Knack blew it. Brazier gave up a leadoff home run. Bonna came in and was great. Honeywell came in, pitched amazing. 3 innings pitched, 2 hits, 1 walk, 2 Ks. Henriquez, which we love him, 2 innings pitched, 2 hits, 1 earned run, 2 ball or 2 walks and a K.
It's what we call in sports a gentleman's sweep.
The gentleman's sweep.
You give him one. Let him get one. It's okay.
You let him get one. So Tommy Edman's 3-for-4 in that game, 2 RBIs. He's the best hitter on the Dodgers right now, at least average wise.
I called that.
You called it. Muncy, 1-for-2. So this is the start right now, game two of the streak that he's going to go on right now, which is 13 consecutive. Reaches base 13 consecutive times, which breaks or ties a record.
He broke the record.
He tied it.
He was tied with, going into the ninth inning tonight, he was tied with Reggie Jackson.
I thought it was 11 was the record.
I think it was in the National League or something like that.
11 was the National League record?
Maybe. I don't know. But yeah. I mean, that's still that's an amazing stat.
I was actually surprised what he.
But that's what that's why analytical people love a guy like that. Who cares about his batting average? Just get on base.
I want to talk about game two. A
walk
bit.
Is just good as a hit.
Are you going to jump to game three?
No, we can wait. Talk about game two.
So I still believe we could have won game two, even though we were down 7-3. Kike Hernandez came up two different times with, I think, runners on first and second or bases loaded with one out.
Yeah, no, you're right.
And we were still putting pressure on the Mets, where if a couple of base hits here and there, we could have pulled that game out. We did lose it, but if we didn't give up the grand slam, we got the win. We gave that game away, didn't get guys on, but Kike had a shot to have a big base knock, and he, you know, got out a couple times.
Yeah.
And then Ohtani, we could talk about Ohtani. Ohtani was struggling a little bit. He's like, what, 0-for-19 with no runners on?
I think it got bigger than that. But yeah,
Generally speaking, like, he didn't help us either by getting on base. And, like, if he would have got on base, I don't know what Mookie was, how Mookie did in game two. I don't think he was doing very well until tonight. But nonetheless, the bottom half of the lineup was really supporting us. And then jumping into game three, if you're ready for that.
I'm ready.
I mean, the top of the lineup, I mean, Ohtani, Betts, Muncy. I mean, everybody was hitting tonight. So.
Well, that's game four. We're talking about game three.
Oh, sorry. Game three. I'm off.
We're definitely talking about game three because we're talking about Bueller. Because I really want to talk about Walker Bueller. So let's
missed the game.
That's
right.
My guy.
We're jumping into game three.
That's
here we go.
My guy.
Sorry, game three.
Walker Bueller is back. Okay, he is back. Granted, he only pitched four innings, but you take what he like every single time he's done. He's pitched. He's moved forward, maybe one step back, but two steps forward.
He's been so clutch in the playoffs.
He's
man.
Been clutch in the
that
playoffs.
That bases loaded full count.
His whole
pitching
career.
Against Lindor.
His whole career, he's been clutch in the playoffs.
He goes five. He goes four innings pitched, three hits, zero earned runs, two walks, six Ks. He threw 90 pitches in 90. He threw 90 pitches, which in four innings is not great. You think he was already up to 50 pitches by the end of the second inning, but he battled. He had some bulldog in him. He had some Hershiser bulldog in him, and he had a lot of swing and miss. He wasn't spot on the entire time. He wasn't hitting the zone all the time. But when he missed, when he missed, he didn't miss bad. He didn't miss in the zone. He didn't get away with anything. That's what I'm saying. He looked really good. If he missed, it was out of the zone. It was unhittable. But he had a lot of movement on his pitches, and he had that grit, and it was great to see. And all that means is now, because he's not going to pitch again for this. No, if it does go to game seven, he would pitch. Mm-hmm. Which, let me just say it, he ain't going to pitch again in the series. There's no way the series is going to game
it?
Seven. I'm calling it. There's no way it's going to game seven. You know, I'm just going to call that. So that means now we can take what he's got, what he's doing now, he can take that in to the series against Cleveland and really hand it to them.
You guys are really good. I won't say nothing. I'll just let it slide.
I know.
Can we give it time?
Will come.
Look, it'll be amazing if it's look. I want it to be Dodgers Yankees. I want it to be Dodgers Yankees. I don't want the you know. I want it to happen. So, but Bueller looked amazing. It was the right move to pull Bueller after four innings pitch. Kopech came in, one inning pitch, zero hits, 1K. Looked outstanding. Brazier came in, one inning pitch, zero walks, 1K. Outstanding. Trinan came in, one inning pitch, zero earned runs, 2Ks. Kasperius, sure, whatever. Two innings pitch.
Kasperius,
one walk, 3Ks. Look, pure dominance on pitching once again. The Mets get zero runs. Let's look at the offense for a second. I can't because someone's got their marker on my notes. Oh, you're messing me up. Move. Thank you. Ohtani, 1-for-4. Home run. 3 RBIs. Betts, 1-for-4. Muncy, 2-for-2. Continuing the streak with the home run. Also with a walk. Smith finally decided to bring his bat to a game. 2-for-4. Had an RBI. Kike Hernandez, 2-for-5. Home run. 2 RBIs. Dude, it was a great game. I was loving that game the entire time. Sitting on the couch just like, hey. It was awesome. Pure dominance. I was stressed with Bueller's pitching, but as soon as they took Bueller out, then it was like, all right, let's enjoy the baseball game. It was great.
How dirty was that bases loaded full count pitch to Lindor to strike him out swinging?
Not only did he strike him out swinging, he yelled some stuff at Lindor, which if it was the Padres, they would have cleared benches. I'm really shocked that there was no Mets yelling stuff back at him. It's this Mets team, they're very nice. They're very polite. You know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, it's NLCS. Yeah, so you got to get loud and excited for pitch, for striking. Yeah. Like in that spot, like that was a huge pitch for him.
Yeah,
well, it was huge for the game.
Yeah. It totally was. Because if there's a base hit right there, that changes the momentum of the game for sure.
Maybe
the
even series.
The Dodgers still going to win that. They're still going to win that game, but it definitely does change the momentum a little bit. I wish. I'm sure John Boy's probably done a lip sync thing or something like that, lip read thing on what he yelled to him. It was definitely like "Get the F out of here" or something like that. And it's not like Lindor didn't see it. Lindor was looking right at him when he said it too. If they would have said that to anybody, I'm really shocked that nobody came at him and said anything to him about it. But anyways,
Lindor's not that kind of player.
I like Lindor. I respect him. When he hit that homer the other day, he didn't showboat. He did it like a true professional. I like the way the Mets carry themselves as a team.
Yeah,
I respect them more so than the Padres, that team down south. You guys
hate that Padres squad.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
It's just their arrogance. We're not supposed to talk about them anymore. We're not supposed to talk about them anymore.
Listen, I respect the Mets. I respect
that the Mets organization.
The way I like the way they carry themselves. I mean, obviously, I'm saying that because we're winning. But
they're picking that up from Lindor. He's always smiling. That. He's not that kind of
I like it.
A player.
They're playing baseball. I mean, obviously, we're stoked because we're up 3-1 and we're beating the tar out of them.
Dominating them, basically, yeah.
But I do like that they're not childish in the losses, I guess. Like, they're taking their beating like a man. Can I say that?
I think that's the best way to say it.
That's the best way to say it. It is a beating, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, as much as I want to get cocky about this, we haven't even talked about the game 4 yet. But let's not forget, the Dodgers were down 3-1 to the Braves with 2020, I believe, in the playoffs, right? Am I wrong on that?
Yeah, you guys won the World Series in 2020.
And ended up coming back winning 3 straight winning. Now, we have the tools to do it. We should have never been down that far. I don't think the Mets they just don't have the players to do it. They could get hot, but after the beatings they've been taking, I can't see them getting even up out of bed tomorrow to play this baseball game, which is very cocky of me to say because I'm a Dodger fan. So I really hope this doesn't come back and bite us in the butt, but
guys are already starting to book their vacations.
Oh yeah.
The wives are already like, hey, yeah, look, yeah, you know, yeah, yeah, we could get on this flight on Wednesday.
Max, I mean, do you follow the Mets at all? Do you know anything about
them? I don't even follow the National League, bro.
I know.
But yeah, wow, geez, no. I
better start following.
I'm just saying you're New Yorker.
I know more, but I watch a lot of baseball. But yeah, so what's your question?
I guess my question is, like, I haven't followed them at all other than just admiring them from a distance the National League team on the other side of the country. But do they have the talent to win 3 straight?
I don't see the Dodgers losing 3 straight.
I don't either.
The Mets have the talent to win 3 straight, yes.
But I don't see the
if it was another opponent, yes.
Yeah, maybe.
Because here's the thing with the Mets, right? All season long, they've been dead and buried a dozen times over. And for whatever reason, they've been super resilient. And
all the games have been comeback wins too, right?
Yeah, like Lindor hits the home run against the Braves to get them into the playoffs. Then Alonso with, you know, what is
that
it?
A two-run shot
against Milwaukee, facing elimination against one of the best closers. They come back in that. Like they've been doing that all year. Remember, I told you, they were at one point 11 games under 500. I think they lost their first 5 or 6 games. And yet, for whatever reason, whatever they're doing in that clubhouse, they haven't folded and they've been able to have, you know, come back, make the playoffs, get to this round. Because this was a year, if you guys remember, last year they had Scherzer and Verlander.
Yeah.
And when they traded them at the trade deadline, they told both of them, we are not competing in 2024. We're going to compete in 2025. Like, because we're not going to compete. We're going to build this farm system. We're going to do the whole draft conversation, all that stuff. We're not competing. We're not going to be bringing in all high-priced free agents. We're saving that for 25, because in 25, you got this coming summer. Soto's being a free agent. There's some pitchers, and third. So they told them then, we're not competing this year. So started this year.
What a missed opportunity. Could you imagine how good they'd be if they still had Scherzer and Verlander?
No, they had them.
No,
they
they
traded them, and they got back a haul in their minor league system, which is their number one minor league player is from that trade.
They're both hurt.
So now this year, them getting to this point is, I think, like, it's what is that, house money? It's like,
yeah.
That's why they're probably not.
They're here on house money.
They're here on house money. So that's why they're not paying. They've already had a successful season.
It's an anomaly, right?
It's an anomaly. Yeah,
because for them to be in the
like
LCS.
Their pitching staff is piecemeal put together. There's no, you know, some of their they had a young pitcher who went to Tommy John. Everything has been piecemeal. 1 year contract guys. Their whole pitching staff is like 1 year contract guys. So like a transition.
Sounds like it should
good
be
manager.
A lock.
I would
should
say
be
that.
A lock for the Dodgers to go to the World Series. Yeah.
So I don't know if they'll lay down and die, but yeah. I think the Dodgers are just hot right now. I think it's more of that than, you know, than the Mets getting hot and winning three in a row.
You want to?
They can
in?
Do it, but I don't see the Dodgers allowing that.
Robert, you want to jump into Game 4 tonight's game?
I just want to remind everybody to click that like and subscribe.
I like
button.
It. Like and subscribe. Wow. We're on X, Instagram.
We're on all kinds
Twitter.
Of social media.
Yeah, come find us.
So does this series buy this playoff run by the manager Mike some extra breathing room? I know you're tough on him.
Yeah, and I hate it's it. You know what sucks? Like I'm eating crow.
But that's a good thing if you're winning.
You know what? Like
why? What did you say?
I've always been critical of Roberts, and if we would have had an early exit this postseason, I couldn't put it on Roberts because of the injuries we've had to our pitching staff.
That's a good point.
Okay.
And you guys always say that it's always predetermined by upper management for the pitching rotation. That bullpen game against the Padres, I'll bring it back again, like, he left, like, it just, I think he should be the MVP of the playoffs for the team, I think. Just because of the roster he's got to play with. Everybody's hurt.
Even when the game me and Robbie went, what was that, game one?
Yeah.
Robbie was apoplectic when he was taking guys out, after getting two outs. Like, why is he going to bring this guy in? And he's going to have to go sin and come back. And it all worked out.
I'm just not a fan of...
I don't love him, but I can't...
It worked out.
I'm with you, Robbie. I don't love him, but this series...
I didn't say that.
What's that?
You're like, you said you're with me. You're like, I don't love him. Like, I didn't say that. What I was going to say was, I'm not a fan of taking a pitcher out when I feel like they're doing a great job. I'm not a fan of like taking a pitcher out after they got two outs to bring in somebody else in. And that pitcher starts the next inning. And you do this chain effect where now you're just doing, no pitchers aren't starting clean innings because they're coming in halfway through the inning.
That's a great
take. What I'm not a fan of. But looking at probably who they're trying to match up with, that's just how it happened.
Now. Yeah.
And that's what he's doing. He's just matching up the players.
Yeah.
And I'm not a fan of... I feel like that's more pressure for a relief pitcher to come in when there's already people on base.
I agree with that.
And I don't... If you can get out of that inning without having that... But I don't know. It goes both ways. I'm just not a fan of it. But I understand why he's doing it. And obviously...
If it didn't work out...
It's working out with this...
In this series,
for sure. And in the Padres series as well. Like... This is the most dominating I've seen a bullpen pitching or a bullpen in quite a while. Like when they're coming in, you just expect, yep, this is an out, this is an out, this is an out. It's shocking when someone gets a hit. Like with Trinan and Kopech and Evan Phillips, even though Evan Phillips kind of struggled a little bit today, I still think he could have left him in. They look really, really good. Those three pitchers and anybody else you pepper in around them with Bonda. They're good, man. They're just good to watch.
I didn't see this coming. I thought for sure, and we talked about it early on, I figured we could only give up three runs tops, and our offense had to put up seven or eight, nine runs to win. But what's happening is our bullpen and our pitching shutting them down, and our offense is putting up a bunch of good baseball numbers.
Yeah.
They set another record. We got like 31 walks or something, or 32 walks in this series, which is a new record.
In four games, yeah.
Our plate discipline is amazing.
Well, to be fair, the Mets are also known for being their pitchers, they rely a lot on chase. And so the Dodgers are very good at planning ahead, and they're already a team that doesn't chase already, but knowing that a lot of their pitchers need that in order to be successful and to last long in the games, that's what they've been, that's the approach they've been taking. And they've been able to knock out their starters really quick because they're not, they just know like, hey, if there's spin on it, it's probably not going to be a strike. That's kind of like, I think that's what they're looking at right now. Let's talk about game four really quick because that's the most current one. Here we go. We waited this long. If you've lasted this long just to hear us talk about the current game, you're a rock star. All right, here we go.
I wouldn't be surprised if they listen to us follow this long because we have great content.
Great content. All right, Dodgers take game four, 10-2 Dodgers. Yamamoto looked pretty good. Think he could have stayed in there a little bit longer, but it was obviously was the right move. Yamamoto goes 4 1/3, 4 hits, 2 earned runs, 1 walk, 8 Ks, only 73 pitches. I mean, pretty efficient. It was. It could be maybe a little bit better, but 73 pitches in 4 innings, that's pretty good. 4 1/3. Phillips comes in, goes 1 1/3, 2 hits, 0 earned runs, 1 walk, 2 Ks. Trinan comes in, 1 1/3. See the pattern here? 2 hits, 0 earned runs, 1K. And then Henriquez comes in to mop it all up. 2 innings pitched, 2 hits, 0 runs, 1 walk, 1K. Ohtani, 1 for 4, leadoff home run. So it broke his streak of consecutive, what was it? I think, Mike, you might have been right. I think it was 19. I feel like it was like in the 20s.
It was probably more. Two games ago, it was 0 for 19. It could have been 0 for 20 or 0 for 21.
Yeah. But, so he had this weird stack going on where he couldn't get a hit if there was nobody on base. But if there was someone on base, it's like he was something ridiculous. Like it was like 17 for 20 or something.
Yeah,
like
he's
that.
Batting like 800.
Yeah. If somebody's on base, it was some ridiculous stat. Yeah. So anyways. Ohtani 1 for 4, leadoff home run. He had 3 walks in this game. Betts, the game right now, 4 for 6, home run, double, 4 RBIs. He was a triple shy of a cycle.
Yep.
Tommy Edmonds, 2 for 6, hitting in the 4th spot. He had 2 doubles, 3 RBIs. Kike Hernandez, still being Kike in October. What do you call it? Kiktober? Kiktober, sure. 2 for 5, an RBI. Muncy, 1 for 2, 3 walks, reached base 12 consecutive times, new postseason record. I wrote new postseason record, so it has to be true. Pure dominance. Like, this is just, it's just a fun baseball team to watch. You never know where the offense is going to come from because the lineup is so deep, it's so scary that when the opponents look at it.
I got something for you on Kike.
Go, tell me now.
Highest OPS on the road, postseason history, minimum 75 at bat.
Wait, is he highest? Because
hold on, listen to number one.
No, there's a list.
Here's the number. Here's the top four. Lou Gehrig, 1.375.
Babe Ruth next.
I said Lou freaking Gehrig.
Yeah, Babe Ruth.
Babe Ruth, 1.315.
Reggie Jackson.
Freaking Ruth. Number four, Carlos Beltran.
Yeah,
underrated Hall of Famer right there. Mm-hmm. 1.141. Remember, he has those ridiculous playoff runs with Houston.
Yeah,
and also with the Mets. Actually,
yeah, well, he played with the Mets.
He had great runs with the Mets and ridiculous that Houston year was like home run after home run. And then you have Kike Hernandez at 1.077. How cool is that? To be on any list with Babe Ruth and freaking Lou Gehrig is ridiculous.
Let's talk about Kike for a second
that
because
is nuts.
I wanted to actually. There's a segment that I want to talk about him. Let's just jump into it now. So it's interesting that you bring up how good he is in the postseason.
Yep.
Because this isn't a fluke, right? Obviously, we've seen him do it for many years with the Dodgers. He did it in Boston. He had a great run in Boston. I think he broke some record with like extra base hits or something like that.
We don't need
like
to talk about Boston. Let's talk about the Dodgers.
Back to Dodgers. Look at what he's doing right now. So we put so much stake in what players do in the regular season. For example, Aaron Judge. Right? So I do believe Kike did something. I think he's like past Judge in like a lot of things right now. And they have almost the same amount of at-bats, I think, in the postseason or something like that. Something that's kind of sad, but then also great at the same time. Because you put all this money in a player to be great in the regular season. We see it many times with Alex Rodriguez, with all these other players that prove that they can be these types of players in the regular season. But when the playoffs come, they're non-existent, or they're a shell of themselves, or maybe they might have one game, but they don't do great
in their head.
The postseason. It's in their head. So do you put more stock in a player like Kike? Considering, look at Kike. He just signed a 1-year contract for $4 million to play with the Dodgers. They picked him up last minute. Remember that podcast? We were excited that they picked him up. He was like the last piece that they got before the season even started. He showed up with like a week left, I believe, maybe 2 weeks left of of preseason before the season even started. Look at the contributions you're getting out of this guy right now. So why aren't teams going after him more to lock him into a longer contract, knowing, like, I'm talking about contenders, teams that are contenders that you know they're going to make it, so they can handle a regular season Kike, but then knowing that you're going to have a Kike like this in the postseason. Don't you think that
well, a lot of teams have guys like that, you know?
Not as good as Kike, apparently.
Well, if you're not in the position, but a lot of teams have players like Kike who will come up and do, you know, have a big hit for you when it matters.
But do they have those big contracts?
No, they don't. They never do, because
does that seem crazy,
the contenders would feel like, we need to get to the postseason. We'd rather play a guy who's going to have, you know, success over the 162, because there are a lot of little guys like Kike who come up big and have clutch hits,
right?
And you wouldn't, they're not household names. There was a guy on Tampa, the Rays, during their little run the last few years, third baseman. He played everywhere. It was a weird name, Brocher or Broussard or whatever it is. He had a weird name. No, not Scott Brocious. I know Scott Brocious, bro. But whatever the kid guy's name was, I can't think of his name. But whenever he played the Yankees, they would pinch hit him in the late innings, and he would come up freaking clutch. And I'm like, what the hell? This little guy is like a bench dude, but whenever they put him in a key situation, late innings, he came through. So teams have guys like that. Yeah, yeah.
Freeze was like that.
Yeah, there's guys like that in the league all around, and they never get, like you're saying, the love that they deserve, because, you know, through the 162, they won't perform like that. But in certain pocket situations, the manager knows these guys got the balls and the clutch factor.
And the swagger.
The swagger to come in and, you know, in this isolated incident, they're not going to embarrass themselves. In fact, they're going to thrive. Don't pay that. You know what I mean? It's hard to quantify, because remember, this is an analytical baseball world. It's hard to quantify that analytics aspect of being clutch. You know, how much is that worth? I know exactly how much 35 home runs, 100 RBIs is worth, how many wins that's going to get me.
Right.
But a guy who's going to come in and stare down another a top reliever, you know, who's throwing 100 miles an hour and come up with a base hit, hard to do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Hard to pay for that.
My take with Kike is, I think he's meant to be a Dodger. And I think it's just a fit between who he is and how he plays. I think it's just meant to be. He needs to be a Dodger, and he's clutch in October, and he'll always be clutch for as long as he's a Dodger. I think there's something he said for the chemistry of LA and how he plays for us. I don't know if he would.
I mean, he did it in Boston also.
I mean, to this level?
Yeah, he had some historic run in Boston as well. I didn't much either, but they were talking about some things that he did in Boston as well. I don't know if Max, if you can pull it up. He broke some record over there. I think it was his second year over there. I'm just saying, like, we've been talking a lot about Teoscar Hernandez. We've talked a lot about Walker Buehler, as far as, like, do the Dodgers bring them back? Do the Dodgers offer them a contract? Same thing
with
Clarity.
You got to bring back Kike.
I feel like you've hit that point now, especially with the way that Chris Taylor is.
He's done.
They had Chris Taylor with, I mean, you still have him. I think you still have Chris Taylor for like another 2 years, but
I would get rid of him.
When you're talking about that contract you give to a player because they're clutch, I mean, they did actually, I think, give that to Chris Taylor, now that I think of it, because Chris Taylor was pretty clutch in the playoffs at one point, and he wasn't a starter for the Dodgers. So they gave him, I don't know, I think it was like a 6-year, $40 million contract or something like that. I don't know the numbers too much, but I think what Kike has done for the Dodgers, with his first time with the Dodgers and now with his second time with the Dodgers, it seems like a no-brainer to figure out a number that works to keep him in this organization for at least another 3 or 4 years. Because it just makes sense. I'm not sure how old he is now that I've just said all that. I mean, I don't think he's that old. So 3 or 4 years, I think, would be reasonable for him. Unless there's another team coming knocking on the door saying, hey, we know we're going to be in the postseason. We need a player like you that has that swag, but then also has that
flexibility to play a lot of positions.
The Dodgers need to keep him. He's too valuable.
Kike's 33, by the way. And the guy I was talking about on Tampa was Mike Brousseau. And the year I was talking about, he batted .302 with only 98 plate appearances. So it was like, whenever they needed, he came up with a big hit.
Yeah.
Just a little scrappy guy who just clutch. Just doing a little fact checking.
Well, look, I think we're all for
Kike being a Dodger long term.
At 33, what are you giving him though?
Like I said, I'd say three or four year deal.
Let's get rid of CT3 somehow.
No one's taking that guy, man.
If you're releasing him,
I mean, I guess it's not that much money for the Dodgers. I don't know.
Drop him. Release him.
Without doing a huge deep dive on his contract.
No, you can trade guys like that. You don't need to release him. You don't need to DFA.
I don't know. Who would DFA him?
Huh?
Who would take CT3?
People will take him. If you attach like
his bat's leg, I don't know. Maybe.
Yeah, you could pass him on, especially if you say you'll pay some of his salary and, you know.
I would let CT3 go. As much as Chris Taylor's done for us, I think it's time for him to go, and I think Kike takes his spot in that roster slot. He's valuable. But again, we can probably wrap it up a little bit, Robbie. Dodgers are looking really good. Well, I don't know. It's 11.
You got to get out of here?
I know, but our stat master does.
We could talk about the next game if you want.
You mean the game we're going to win?
The preview of the game. So, all right. So, the Dodgers got game 5. Flaherty's on the mound tomorrow. But we had a whole ad spot that Max was supposed to read.
We'll do it right now.
Jeez, man.
Do it right now.
Just jumping the gun. I didn't even copy and paste it into the notes.
It better not be like one of those fake ads, like
buy a
Toyota or something.
No, real one.
Yeah, real one. This is a real company. Is it up and coming company? I think we've all heard of them before. I'm gonna go ahead and put this read in here for you, Max, and you just go ahead and you read it. Okay, it's in
the box. And I don't see anything in our notes.
You get Kike a 1 year deal. Just keep, go give him 1 year deals.
3 year deal.
Okay, Max, on the
way. And he pitches. He does.
He's valuable. The Player Spotlight is brought to you by Roger Bray Media, the up and coming podcast company delivering top quality content across all podcast platforms. I don't know, top quality. That's what it says here.
But it is top quality. Those guys know what they're doing.
All right, let me Ron Burgundy this thing.
Do
from
it.
Sports entertainment to in depth movie and TV reviews, Roger Bray Media is your go to for fun and exciting content. Don't miss out. Visit their Patreon page at patreon.com/RotYourBrainMedia and help buy some coffee to support this dynamic new company and be part of something special. Subscribe now and get ready to have your brain truly entertained. What is this? I'm not going to write these. You almost caught me with that. I was about to say it's time to...
You think he's Ron Burgundy? He's going
to... I was about to read that last line.
Anything you put on the teleprompter, he's going to read.
You almost had me there.
I know. I see it too.
San Diego?
You almost had me. Hey, someone had that meme going on. They put a tiny face on him.
You saw that, right? Yeah.
That was good.
Okay, so next game. Game 5. Today, tomorrow, depending on when you're actually listening to this podcast... Flaherty's taking the mound against a bullpen game for the Mets. Look, if the Mets bullpen is not that good, the Dodgers should be able to seal the deal in New York. I'm anticipating the Dodgers win this game. I feel like they've already knocked all the fight out of the Mets. The Dodgers win this game. Max, is there any stats we need to even look at in this game?
No, I think here is the only stat you need to look at is Flaherty's bank account because he's trying to secure that bag. That's the only stat that matters. He's going to come out and do a back-to-back great outing so a team can give him the bag in the offseason. I don't know if it'll be the Dodgers, but somebody's going to pay that man.
I'm going to step out on a limb here, and I see Flaherty going 7.
There you go. That's how you get that money.
All right.
That's the only stat that matters.
He's gone at least 5 innings ever since we've had him.
There you go.
Usually 6. I think it was 7 innings.
Listen, teams pay a lot for pitchers who perform in the postseason, so I'm sure he's focused, man. And that's it's a win-win,
I think,
right?
He wants for the Dodgers, to be a Dodger anyways.
He probably does, but if they can't pay him, he'll get his money somewhere else.
Well, you also got...
Yeah, he grew up a Dodger fan. He has pictures of him all online as a kid with Dodger gear and stuff, so...
Look, if... let's just say that he does go... Let's say he goes 5 innings, goes 6 innings. You still got Kopech that you didn't even use today. You've got Bonda you didn't even use. You've got Hudson you didn't even use. You have some high leverage pitchers that are still extremely fresh that could come in and seal the deal for the Dodgers tomorrow. So,
what's the status on Vessier?
I mean, if he comes back, obviously he can't come back to the World Series. I don't know. I haven't looked up too much on it. But right now, I mean, yeah, if he was missed. If you had Vessier, if you're going to go all the way back and talk about game 2, if Vessier wasn't hurt, I don't think Knack pitches that second inning. I think that's Vessi who pitches that second inning.
Yeah,
it's a totally, it's a totally different game. Knack doesn't even come in until the end again. You stick with the same blueprint that you used against the Padres. You just manipulate it a little bit as far as like when people come in, but you still kind of use that order the same as far as like the priority of those pitchers. And then if you looked at it, you know, Knack didn't come until the very end last time. I think you would still stick with that same blueprint if Vessier didn't get hurt. But he's out, so it doesn't matter. All right. I think that's going to do it for this episode of Talking Dodgers. Thank you so much for listening. Sorry that we missed a couple episodes, but we are back better than ever. Maybe we'll throw in some extras. Who knows?
Help us spread like a virus.
Help us spread like a virus. Click that like and subscribe button. If you're a fan, please go check out our Patreon page at patreon.com/RotYourBrainMedia. All of your contributions help us create new content, keep the lights on, and, you know.
Pay for the coffee to keep us up.
Pay for the coffee to keep us up. All right.
Let's go, Dodgers. I am stoked for our chances right now.
Love it. All right. We'll catch you guys next time.
See you on the next one.
Yep.